Nicole Morvan is the Harvest Monitor Coordinator for the Directorate of the Nisga Fisheries and Wildlife. CACK News had a chance to catch up with Nicole in the Nass Valley as crews prepare to process the thousands of ulikin caught this season so far. As the run comes to an end, Nisga members, young and old, gather at the camps to process the ulikin and prepare for a plentiful harvest.
Nicole Morvan from Nisga Fisheries and Wildlife in the Nass Valley. I've been working on the ulikin project for the past 16, 17 years here in the Nass Valley. Our Nisga Fish and Wildlife program is a stock assessment program, so part of that is doing the ulikin project. So we work with, we have seven camps down there, but currently there's only four camps open right now. So I work with those camps that are there to collect our data. I also get to watch the process on how everything's done as I sit and wait for, you know, biosamples. So biosamples are me getting out and taking the ulikin and taking them back and processing, doing sexing them, lengthening them, taking otoliths. And then also getting to watch the full process of not just like the fishery, but the grease making of the ulikin fishery. So, yeah, and right now we're at the point where all of the bins are full. So once the bins are full, they have to wait at least 9 to 10 days, depending on the weather. Sometimes it's shorter, sometimes it's longer. And then once the ulikins are ready to cook, that process is probably like an 18-hour process, something like that. It's like over a two-day period, pretty much. It's just getting the bins ready at the same time as waiting for them to be ready for cook. Yeah, so right now I'm going to head down there tonight. They start the grease cooking, so I'll have a little bit of video about that and see how that goes.
Amazing, Nicole. That sounds super cool. As you remember, you know, I was up there a couple of years ago, so I got a firsthand experience watching the ulikin being harvested. Maybe you can tell us, one, a little bit about the Nass River and then also about ulikin. What is ulikin, and when do we usually see ulikin come up the river? So tell me a little bit about the Nass first, and where do you see these ulikin coming in?
They come in just... you go towards King Colas, so I don't know if anybody knows where the Nass is. We're about 100 kilometers north of Terrace, BC. So you'll drive about 1.5 hours to get there, and you'll see the signs along the side of the road. It's called the we call it Fishery Bay. You'll see the sign there on the left, I believe, when you're coming down the hill. So that's in between Lacaltep and Gingle. And then the ulikin itself, the only way I could really describe it is like smelt. I've never tasted smelt myself, but a lot of people are like, when I tell them it's like smelt, and they seem to know what smelts are. We call them our savior fish. So when our winter stock is like dwindling down, and then we turn to the ulikin harvest, which happens in March. So pretty much the whole month of March, our crews are down there for that whole month harvesting and preparing. So then we're prepared for the next winter and only taking what we need. And yeah.
I also noticed this year that the crescent moon was pointed upwards.
Yes.
What does it mean for the Nisga if the crescent moon is pointing upwards, the spoon as it were?
They want to see that point of the moon like that. We call it Holy Year. We celebrate that. So that tells us whether or not we're going to have a good harvest. And this year was a good, I would say a good harvest, but only 4 out of the 7 fish this year. So we'll see. Yeah, we got what we needed, basically.
That's great. Nicole, maybe tell me more about, you know, the run itself. There's a Ulliken run on the Nass. There's also one on the Skeena, but the Nass one seems to be very strong. You know, there's a number of people harvesting it, and you mentioned they're going to be cooking tonight. So, you know, tell me a little about the strength of the run, and also what is going to be, why do you cook the Ulliken down? What are they trying to render once they cook it all down?
I believe the strength of the run is from our own people helping our Nisga Fisheries Program monitor the fishery. So basically we're collecting data every year that they're harvesting. So I have developed this good relationship with these camps that are in there. Like we have different camps, 4 camps. So I have 1 person per camp that will do the data with me. So I'll leave a log there for them and then we'll go over that. You know, during the season, end of the season, then the following year, we'll look back at our data. But we've also had, in the last couple of years, had some help with Mother Nature, because the last couple of years prior to this year, we didn't get the abundance that we normally do for like a good feed because of the ice barrier that we had to endure during that time. Which kind of helps, you know, the run go by and do its thing. So it's kind of a blessing for us, and people comprehend that. And so we now know that we have to really, you know, savor what we have, save the grease that we have, save the ulliken that we have, like the fresh frozen, smoked salmon, sun-dried. Like we do jarred salmon, canned salmon in the summer. So that's jarred sockeye mostly. And in the wintertime, that is going to be used for our winter supply on top of using the grease. So the grease from the ulliken will be drizzled over like a jar of salmon, and you'd have like some basmati rice and a little bit of seaweed in there. You drizzle the grease in there, and that kind of helps your, especially during the winter, it helps protect your immune system. So we use that. We also use it when we're doing feasts. We have some ladies that would bring, you know, the berry picking that happens in the summer that's frozen, and it's used during the winter, like when we have feasts, and then and some of the berries that they serve with the soups, they drizzle some of the grease in there as well. It just kind of helps to settle the stomach after eating the mousse, because so sometimes it's a little bit greasy depending on the catch. Yeah, there's a bunch of things. Some of the elders, they go to, for breakfast, they have it with their toast. So they'll drizzle some grease on their toast. And it's mostly just to help flush out your immune system, to basically to protect your immune system. And we also use it on, so not only do we do jarred salmon, we do dried salmon. So those are what we call gayuk. So also in the winter, that's some of our go-to, where we like pull out a bag of gayuks and we're sitting around chit-chatting, and we'll have the gayuks with some potato chips, and then we also have a bowl of grease there where we take turns dipping our gayuks into. It's delicious. You'll have to try it.
Yeah, I've tried it on bread before, and it definitely is an acquired taste.
Yes.
but of course, you know, if you're growing up eating this, this is a delicacy.
Yeah.
And I know, you know, when we're up at Hobie, and I've been to other, you know, events as well, there are people who, you know, have jars, and it's coveted, you know, giving a jar of ulliken grease to someone. I know some people just, they couldn't get anything better in the world.
Yes, for sure. Especially the elders. They really love it.
Nicole, just the last thing for you. You know, this is kind of getting towards the end of the season here for the ulliken. And of course, as things start to warm up, we'll start to see, you know, springs come up the river. What do you always look forward to around this time of year, around ulliken season, and what do you got planned for the rest of the year?
bullocking season is my favorite time of the year. Not only that I'm out in the field, I get to visit with these different camps, but I also get to know who they are, where they come from, their families especially, because they're super proud of their families. They're super proud of taking care of our people, because not only are they just filling the bins to, you know, get their grief and share their grief, they're also like food fishing for our community. So each community will get a feed from that fishery. So it's a whole cool process that I'm just super proud to be a part of, to witness and just to see them, you know, helping each other out, also helping our urban locals as well. Once I wind down from this, I do non-salmon all year round. So non-salmon is crab and a halibut fishery. We just did a crab study a week prior to this Ulican fishery this year. On top of that, I monitor the halibut and crab fishery. So I also get to know the majority of the fishers that come into King Cole, not just the locals, but we get people from Smithers, Kitimat, people from Alberta that come up for halibut and crab fishing. And then we move into the salmon catch program, which will begin in May, and then that runs until September. But in between that, we also have a juvenile coho fence that we run from May to June. That's just below the lava beds here. And then after the salmon catch fishery, we also run the adult coho weir from like September to November, depending on the weather. And at the same time as that's going on, we have the wildlife program that's going on, which is the moose hunt. Yeah, that's pretty much my year. So I'm like busy all year round, then downtime in the winter, we're doing reports and stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. It sounds like a busy time, but also as you're saying that, I'm getting excited because I know that spring and summer is just around the corner.
Yes, yeah, for sure. It should be good. It'll be fun.
Well, Nicole, that's all I had for you. Thanks so much for giving us the time and your insight, and good luck with the rest of the Ulican harvest and the rest of your season.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for your time.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.
Learn more about CICK. Visit us.
In advance of Canada's April 28th federal election, CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby is presenting a series of interviews with the mayors of British Columbia's Lower Mainland. This series will give each a chance to share what they see as the most important issues for voters in their city, what they would like to see from members of parliament elected within their municipality, and why this election is particularly important for their constituents. I'm Jesse Wensloff, and in this interview, I speak with Burnaby Mayor Mike Hurley, who identifies housing, transit, the environment, and infrastructure as key priorities for Burnaby residents in the upcoming federal election. He also urges the candidates elected as MPs for ridings serving Burnaby to truly, honestly, and determinedly represent the citizens of Burnaby and bring their concerns to the federal level, and speaks to the motivating impact for Burnaby voters of the Trump administration's ongoing trade war. Here's Mayor Mike Hurley.
My name is Mike Hurley. I'm the mayor of the city of Burnaby and chair of Metro Vancouver.
Thanks for joining me today, Mike.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
As you and our listeners, I'm sure, will know, there is a federal election coming up April 28th. And I wanted to have you on to ask you and give you a chance to tell our listeners what you see as the most important or pressing issues for residents of Burnaby in this upcoming federal election.
Well, certainly, you know, housing is always at the forefront in how we can get more below market and affordable rental housing. And I think, you know, our MLA, our MPs need to really push a lot harder to ensure that not just Burnaby, but BC is getting its share of funding from the federal government. Sometimes we get forgotten about a little out here, and I think we're doing a lot of great things in housing, and certainly we're ahead of the curve when it comes to the rest of the country, but I don't think we're being supported the way we should be by those in Ottawa.
And so in terms of that, is it sort of specifically funding that is the help, or are there sort of legislative changes or programs that you can see helping?
Well, I think it's for the most part funding and ease of achieving that funding. There are lots of times there's too much red tape and too difficult, for example, for nonprofits to wade their way through the 250 pages you have to fill out to get $50,000 seed funding. Those types of things, they really need to be streamlined. And the federal and provincial governments have to work more aligned with each other. And sometimes it seems like they're working against each other. And that's not helping us in achieving the housing we all need to achieve together. And so I would really like to see the three orders of government sit down and come up with a plan that we can all agree to and we can all work within, rather than just forcing things down on cities. It seems like, you know, the federal government and the provincial government are just leaving housing up to municipalities who frankly don't have the funds nor should they be even in that business. However, we, due to humanitarian reasons, many of us have stepped in and tried to help. But, you know, if you look at municipalities, we get 9% of the overall taxes collected in the country. And we're being asked to do more and more and more when it comes to things like housing, when it comes to mental health issues on the streets, when it comes to, trying to fix, catch up with the drug issues we're seeing on our streets, and trying to help people trying to assist people get the help we need. But municipalities aren't really equipped to do all those things, nor do we have the funding to do all those things. But we try to do them because it makes our streets safer. It makes our residents feel better about their cities. So really there's been a lot of downloading onto cities, and we believe that the other orders of government have to step up and stay in their lane kind of thing and do the things that they're supposed to do and do them well.
When it comes to housing in particular, is that issue particularly unique, or is there anything particularly unique about that issue for residents of Burnaby as opposed to the rest of the country?
Well, I think there is, because we're told that we're going to get 1 million new people by 2041. And, we're struggling to meet the needs that we have right now. We have no control over immigration or how people are moved around the country. So we're left to pick up that burden. And so I do think that Metro Vancouver is certainly taking a lot of that weight on, and the expectations of the other orders of government when it comes to housing. And if we don't start catching up with the infrastructure problems, the infrastructure deficit that we're all seeing, then it's going to be difficult to keep moving the housing forward that's needed, the thousands and thousands of units that are needed to house just the people we have right now. So really there needs to be a sitting down, I believe, of the three orders of government and start to work through solutions together.
Great. So that's housing, obviously a huge issue that impacts all Canadians. All Canadians need somewhere to live. Are there other issues that you think are particularly important for residents of Burnaby?
Well, certainly transit. And I know up in the mountain there, it's a big issue there, but it's an issue all through our city, especially when it comes to north-south travel in the city. East-west, we're doing okay. But at the end of the day, we can't grow our public transit system unless we have some permanent and stable funding, rather than running with her hands out every year to 2 years to try and even keep going what we have, the bus system we have and the train line. I mean, I'm involved with the Mayor's Council, and I was part of the decision-making board in TransLink, and I know the deficits and the pressure that everyone's feeling to keep buses running, even as we know it. You know, there are two new SkyTrain lines opening, and I'm not seeing a way that that we're going to be able to operate those because there's no new funding sources coming in. We can't rely solely on raising fares too much because we have to keep it reasonably affordable and so that all people have ways to get around our city, and that's important. But to do that, we really need to develop so we can plan properly. We really need to have a stable funding source that we can rely on and that we know is going to be there. I mean, we can plan many, many great things, but if there's no funding to make it work, then it kind of feels like we're spinning our wheels sometimes.
Right, and I think an issue that ties into that, that is related to public transit, is climate and the environment. How do you see that playing into the minds of Burnaby voters?
Well, I think that's all tied together, and it's really, really important for our residents. We hear it all the time, is, you know, to do all we can to meet our targets, because we have set very, you know, targets that will be difficult to meet unless we start finding different ways of moving around the city, finding different modes of transportation, and you know, doing the things that need to be done. And that's all hard work. It's easy to talk about it, but it's more difficult to get people to make the everyday changes in their life that we all need to make, I think, to protect this place we live for thousands and thousands of more years. And if we keep on going the way we're going, that's you know, reality is it's not going to be a great place to be. So there's a lot of work to do on that. And speaking of federal funding, which we've been trying, we have a heat source, which is our incinerator in Burnaby, that could provide, you know, heat to many, many units in South Burnaby. And we're trying to move that along. And we've been after the federal government to help us fund that. And so that's something else that we will be pushing our MPs on to try and make sure that, and it will make a huge difference in our carbon credits for the city. That project alone would almost make us carbon neutral. Wow. If we can grow it properly. So that's a very important piece for us. And we're trying to work with the other orders of government to say that they want to make these changes. But like the rest of us, they'll have to make some difficult choices too if we're going to make it work. So absolutely, climate's at the top of all our priorities in Burnaby.
Great. And I'm sure there are countless issues that you'd like to see some sort of action or support from the federal government on. But is there one more area that you think is particularly important for Burnaby residents?
Well, I think the infrastructure piece is key, because we're not going to be able to move any of these other things forward unless we get the, for example, we have asked them for $6.28 million for a Gilmore sanitary pump station, Portsmouth upgrade in the Brentwood area. This upgrade would help support development of 23,000 new homes. You know, and you have seen the growth in the Brentwood area and what's needed to happen there. Right now, if we don't get that upgrade going, we will only be able to keep developing up until 2028, because that's a really critical piece of allowing us to continue to grow that area the way we need to. So all these infrastructure pieces, I could go on and on and on about different infrastructure pieces, especially with Metro Vancouver, but we're going to need the federal government and the provincial government to step up to become partners in all those projects. So there's lots to talk about, many, many infrastructure projects. But I think, you know, if we look at housing and we look at transit and we look at the climate change issues that we all have, I think those are top of mind for all outside of healthcare and everything else that we talk about. But I think those, from a city perspective, those would be our priorities.
Right. And the, I mean, as the word infrastructure implies, those do, it does sort of underlie everything else, right?
It does. Yeah. I mean, we can't, as I say to developers all the time who complain about the fees all the time that they have to pay, you know, your building is not worth anything if your toilets don't flush. Yeah. And you know, that's the bottom. No one likes to talk about sewer and water, but I mean, that's a critical part of what we all do. And, not the sexy topics that people like to talk about, but when you first thing you get up in the morning, those are the first things you use, right? So you know, that's the very critical things of what we need to take care of first.
Stepping back from specific policy issues, I wonder if you could let me know what you'd like to see from the members of parliament elected to ridings within Burnaby.
The most important thing for me, for representatives that, you know, represent people in Burnaby is really going after our issues, really representing those people, and working hard to ensure that we're getting a fair shake. And to my mind, that's really what I care about in an MP. We have issues that we can sit down with you and know that you will go to Ottawa and fight for our needs. And that's what I want to see in MPs and in Burnaby. You know, I'm not expecting any big changes in Burnaby. I think it'll stay pretty much the way it is. But, you know, I would just like to ensure that our representatives really do represent us and bring forward the issues that need to be taken care of, and reminding Ottawa that we exist.
Because
sometimes I wonder.
Obviously, this is a big picture federal issue, but it's impossible to ignore that a big part of the conversation around this election has to do with the relationship with the United States and tariffs and all of that. Do you see that as something that Burnaby residents are particularly concerned with, or impacts residents of Burnaby in particular ways?
Well, I think it has Burnaby residents worried about the future, and about, because it's very unpredictable. As we all know, Mr. Trump has a way of doing business that not too many of us understand or even know where he's going. So it's the unpredictability, I think, that concerns most people. Like, you know, we've enjoyed pretty good relations with the United States for a long, long time. And where is this all going? So I think Burnaby residents are very concerned, and very, because they know that's a big trading partner, and so I think that whole issue is very concerning for Burnaby residents, and they're looking, I think, at who's going to be the best prime minister to carry that load, because it is going to be a load, and try to understand what the next move of the Trump administration will be.
That's a good segue into my final question, which is, why is this election in particular particularly important for your constituents, for voters in Burnaby?
Well, absolutely, just what I said. You know, the concern and the stress that the Trump administration has caused the whole world, not just here, but even more so here, because we're such close trading partners. I think that concern is who is the best person to walk into a room to have a negotiation or some kind of relationship with the Trump administration. And I think that's the question that everyone's at the top of everyone's mind for this election. And I think that's why you've seen such a turnaround in the polls. 4 months ago, it looked like it was a done deal, and now it looks very close.
Great. Well, thank you, Mayor Hurley, for taking the time to chat with me and to share this with our listeners.
Yeah, anytime. Thank you very much for having me on.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Take care. Bye.
Bye. That was my interview with Burnaby Mayor Mike Hurley, outlining what he sees as the top priority issues for Burnaby residents in the upcoming April 28th federal election. Stay tuned to CJSF 90.1 FM for more interviews in this series, featuring mayors from other municipalities across British Columbia's Lower Mainland. For CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, I'm Jesse Wensloff. This interview is made possible with funding from the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can find this story and others from across...